This is Agriculture Today.
Nitrogen's derived primarily from natural gas. It hasn't seen the same sort of volatility or rally that crude oil has seen. That hasn't pushed urea nitrogen prices as high as we thought.
Guy Allen is senior economist at the IGP Institute at Kansas State.
A lot of it's just availability on the shipping. A lot of that does come out of the Persian Gulf situation or the Red Sea, and that's sort of what complicated things. I think the availability will always be here in the U.S. It's just a matter of price because it is a global commodity. Where I think the bigger problem shows up is as our competitors, particularly in Brazil and places like Australia, where it just wasn't available. And both those locations, Brazil and Australia, their soil types are such as they sort of have to have fertilizer or they don't get a yield. And their yield response for lack of fertilizer is just, along with the high price, is just, I think both of those yields will be down below trend this year just because of the availability of the fertilizer per se.
Now, fertilizer markets are reacting as if the 16-week conflict with Iran may be easing. Farmers still facing, though, high input costs compared with wheat grain prices. Josh Linville with StoneX says markets pointing toward a real agreement. Shipping, though, remains cautious. U.S. sorghum and soybean export inspections improved sharply last week. Corn inspections eased from the prior week. Overall, USDA says total grain inspected for export, 2.81 million metric tons for the week that ended June 11th. Corn inspections, 1.64 million metric tons, or 64.5 million bushels. Well below the previous week, slightly below the same week last year. Marketing year inspections, though, remain well ahead of last year. Sorghum inspections, 12.3 million bushel, and China accounted for nearly all of the inspected sorghum movement. Bean inspections, 19.2 million bushels. That was above the previous week, double the same week last year. China, Egypt, Mexico, Indonesia, key destinations. And wheat inspections, 12.3 million bushels. It's early in the new marketing year. Well, China's next farm strategy could reshape global commodity demand if Beijing pushes more food, feed, and fuel ingredients from factories instead of fields. USDA's retired economist, Dr. Fred Gehl, says China's 2026 through 2030 plan puts artificial intelligence, drones, biological manufacturing, and novel food products at the center of modernization. Gehl says strategy reflects a broader effort to replace labor with machines, standardize production, and reduce reliance on imported farm commodities. One example, China's focus on amino acids and other fermentation products used in livestock feed. Why does that matter? Well, China already trying to reduce soy meal use with feed additives, but Gehl notes global soybean supplies are large, soy meal prices are low, and it makes replacements less economical. He says producers should watch whether China's plans create real demand shifts or simply more subsidized surplus dumped into global markets. And this is Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We closed the border to the Mexican cattle about 18 plus months ago. Actually, it's 20 months ago, I guess, at this point, mostly. And so that's there, and that's an ongoing question about whether that will stay closed, how long. That's another one of those shoes to fall at some point that we'll be dealing with.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel.
Now that the screwworm fly is in the U.S., Mexico has closed the border to livestock going south out of the U.S. That's not really a big deal from a trade standpoint. We don't export very many cattle to Mexico most of the time. We certainly haven't in the last two or three years. It does impact some horses that get shipped down there, primarily for slaughter. So there's a bit of impact, but it's mostly, I think it's really more of a political thing in the sense that it kind of emphasizes the fact that there's now a continuing conversation about whether the border should remain closed. Either direction or both directions, I guess. Now that it's on both sides of the border in terms of having the pest, should that border remain closed? And that'll be a continuing conversation. I have no idea what decisions might be made. It's partly a science issue, but it is going to be really a political decision about when to open the border. I wouldn't be too surprised if it doesn't happen sometime relatively soon, but that's just a guess on my part. I have no idea what they might actually decide.
How about imports and exports?
You know, we got the latest monthly trade data this week, so that's for April's numbers. And, continuing what we've been seeing for the most part, beef imports. Beef imports were up 10% for the month of April. They're up 14.1% for the year to date. So we continue to import more beef to help supplement domestic supplies here in the U.S. You know, I should point out that beef cow slaughter so far this year in the U.S., first 21 weeks of the year, is down another 16.6%. It's been down the last 3 years in a row. So this is the imports or the market response to that by bringing in some additional supplies to help moderate that decrease in particularly in the lean processing beef that we use for ground beef markets. On the export side, the April data exports were down 17.5%, and they're down 17.7% for the year. So again, we continue to see that. That's not really a surprise that exports are down. We've got limited supplies right now. Production is down a bit. Prices are at record levels. And in fact, one perspective of this is that beef exports have actually held up pretty well, given how unique of a market situation that we're in right now. So it's a continue again of the same thing. The biggest impact on the export side continues to be the political impact of the trade issues we've had with China and Hong Kong, and they're down 36.8% so far this year. In the month of April, down 68%. For the year to date. So, hopefully that's something after the summit that Trump had with President Xi a month or so ago, one of the outcomes of that was to reinstate the export certification for it's like 400 plants in the U.S. So at least it's technically possible for us to start exporting more. Most of the decrease in beef exports last year was due to the loss of that China-Hong Kong market. So they dropped from being our third largest export market to being the fifth largest export market last year. So definitely would like to see some recovery in that particular market.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News now. Agriculture Today.
What it's trying to fix is the fact that we have not been able to add any base acres on ground that is farmed since the 1980s, right? So we have been stuck with the same amount of base acres as what was happening back then.
That's Anastasia Meyer, an Extension Ag economist with the Center for Ag Profitability at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, explaining how base acres are established, who is eligible for an increase, and what producers need to know.
And the simple fact of it comes down to a lot of these farm program payments are based off of what you have base acres in, not what you're planting, but what, how many base acres you have and what it is enrolled in. So this is what's exciting about this One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And landowners are starting to see these postcards come in the mail from the Farm Service Agency saying, hey, you can now review it starting June 1. What is a base acre, right? And how did we get it established? Base acres were established in the 1985 Farm Bill. So if the producer who was farming it signed up for the 1985 Farm Bill, congratulations, you got base acres. So if you're farming a piece of ground that maybe was not enrolled in, or it was pasture and now you actually farm it, you don't have any base acres on that field because it was not signed up for in the 1985 Farm Bill. And in the 1985 Farm Bill, what you planted is what those base acres were established in. Then in 2014, we had the chance to do some reallocation of base acres, which means that we were able to say that in my area that we farm in, we had a lot of base acres in corn, in wheat and milo, grain sorghum, and not in corn and soybeans, because that's what they planted back in 1985. So you were able to reallocate if you wanted to or not. We were able to update yields. Most people did update yields. And then in 2018, we had the chance to update yields again. Not a lot of people could, though. So this is why this change is so exciting for people who are now farming a lot more acres than what they currently have base acres in. So the really great thing about this is there's not a lot of calculations or really anything to do for producers or landowners to look at. Essentially, what they're going to look at is that what you planted or what your producer planted from 2019 to 2023, and they're going to compare it to your 2024 base acres. If you have more acres planted or prevent plant certified at the FSA than what you currently have base acres in, you're going to be able to increase them. It's a simple form. A lot of the postcards that are getting sent out is just for your information, right? You can opt out of adding base acres, but I don't know why any landowner or producer truly would. So yes, it's going to look at 2019 to 23. They're going to see, are you eligible or not? And then we get into a little bit more of the nitty gritty details, right? There is a cap. So we're not going to see a 1-to-1 addition, most likely. So by saying that, if I farm 100 acres, I plant 100 acres and I only have 40 base acres, I'm probably not going to be able to get up to 100. But I'm probably going to be able to get some more. I don't know the certain percentage yet. I don't even think FSA knows that yet.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
All of these factors are at play.
Artland Suderman is with StoneX, outlining what's at play for grain markets.
So if I'm an end user, I have to look at this current price break and say, is this a place that I want to put on some coverage? Is there upside risk? What if war breaks out once again? Now, I think President Trump would prefer not to restart the war until after the midterm elections. That doesn't mean that he might not feel forced into restarting the war. If Iran or Hezbollah or one of the other groups initiates it and he feels like he has to respond. So if I'm an end user, I'm concerned about that going forward, and I have to maintain that in my risk management plan. Now, if I'm a producer, it's a whole different story. I look at this peace plan and what it's done and causing the sell-off in prices today. Best example I can see of this is December corn futures. They were poised right at the critical 440 level on the charts, which has been a critical support level throughout the life of that contract. That has now given way and broken lower. Is there a fundamental story to restore that? Well, if war breaks out in the Middle East, that's entirely possible. That could happen at any point. We know how fast, when this war started, all these prices skyrocketed higher and ignored chart signals went higher. So that's the end user risk. From a producer risk standpoint, what if that doesn't happen? The focus for now, until or unless such headlines hit, is the fundamentals. The fundamentals and the chart momentum, which is to the downside below that chart support level, if that doesn't get reestablished this week. The momentum focused on the weather pattern. The weather pattern with an El Nino growing season is generally favorable for the Midwest. And that's just exactly what the 2-week forecast looks like in the extended forecast as well. Generally favorable. There will be dry pockets that miss out on showers, but generally the temperature is mild enough to help the crops endure that dry period, reduce any risk of stress there. And that tends to give good yields in El Nino years in the Midwest. And so that's what the market's going to trade. The current balance sheet has no reason, with new crop corn ending stocks near 2 billion bushels, soybean ending stocks above 300 million bushels, no reason to ration demand with higher prices. And in fact, nothing to stop the downside momentum of the funds shorting these commodities if they so choose. That's the momentum. On June 30th, we'll have a key report updating the planted acreage of these crops, and there will likely be some more shift, probably from corn to soybeans. What is the extent of that? You probably need to see a couple million acres shift from corn to soybeans in order to get the corn traders, the corn bulls, on the alert. I personally don't think that's going to happen at this point. Soybeans, though, any increase gives us more fluff and more playroom in ending stocks. And so that, again, is not bullish soybeans and gives more courage to the bears. Unless or until China shows that it's going to buy all 25 million metric tons that it committed to last October, I remain skeptical they'll do that. USDA's balance sheet suggests that it is skeptical, and I think most participants in the market are now skeptical. And if, in fact, China does plan on buying the whole 25 million metric tons, I don't expect us to know that until this fall.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This thing finally got here last week, about a week ago. June 3rd, I think, was the day that we first diagnosed it here in the U.S. And so, we've been waiting months for it.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Daryl Peel on New World Screwworm.
So there's kind of two different reactions. One is it's here, we've got to deal with it. On the ground, it's a huge management issue for the producers involved, for the industry in that area, as well as for the state, local, and federal officials that will be working on the containment and eradication of this thing. So those issues are all, and it's still very much a moving target. The last I saw from USDA, we had 9 confirmed cases spread out over, well, really 4 counties in Texas, plus there was a dog in New Mexico. We're still not sure just how big of an issue this is going to turn into. We'll be monitoring that. The other side of that would be sort of what's the market impact of all of this? And that's kind of a good news. Again, the fact that it finally got here was greeted in the futures market almost by a sigh of relief. Not that it's a good thing, but we don't have to worry about when it's going to get here. It's here. And so the futures market reacted negatively very briefly and then quickly got past it from that standpoint. And if you think about it, New World Screwworm really doesn't have much impact on either the supply or the demand fundamentals of cattle and beef markets.
Speaking of markets, Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading in Chicago.
We're finding some buoyancy in the live cattle prices. Feeder cattle prices look relatively strong. Hog market is trying to find a bottom. I'm not necessarily sure it has quite yet, but that's the kind of character in those markets at the moment. In terms of cattle in specific, we've got news out of the market about JBS. They announced it's going to close their Souderton, Pennsylvania beef plant, roughly around 2,000 head per day of capacity. Also, JBS might be closing their Tennessee plant. So this also follows some other recent plant closures and could be deemed bearish for the cattle producers because it reduces the number of outlets competing for cattle. So we'll keep an eye on those type of developments. In terms of some of the bullishness helping the market higher, packers have gained some leverage, so that's a good thing. Slaughter and beef production are still running below year-ago levels. Weekly cattle slaughter was estimated about 524,000 head, which was down from both the prior week and last year. Feeder cattle remain supported by tight supplies, but calves are, I would say, a little more mixed. Oklahoma City feeders results were mixed. Feeders were steady to about 10 bucks higher, while calves were about 2 to 20 bucks lower. And then the demand for the unweaned or short-weaned cows was limited due to basically the hot weather. So that's a dynamic working in the markets. Things that are working against it, cash cattle trade was steady to slightly lower last week. Traded around 255 live, 405 dressed in the north, roughly about steady to a buck lower week on week. Box beef also softened up some with the choice closing lower around just shy of 392 bucks, and the select was also lower. So that is working its way on the cash side of the equation for the cattle market. So we'll keep an eye on some of the inputs, that be the grain prices, and have a plan ready for when it's time to do your marketing if you're a producer, and also lock in some favorable prices if you are on the procurement side of the equation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I think it does, or it certainly goes toward that, Tony.
Deputy Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA, Richard Fordyce.
I mean, you know this as well as I do. You know, the risk and the exposure that, you know, a modern ranch today or a modern farm today in agriculture country is enormous. You know, the capital requirements to plant a crop, raise a herd, whatever that is. And, you know, the exposure to risk, you know, whether that's price risk, you know, we've got great risk management tools, you know, through crop insurance to kind of handle, you know, some weather risk. But, you know, I really think that, you know, voices that have been talking to, you know, congressional leadership for a long time about, you know, about some of these things, and they need to be addressed. And, they were in the One Big Beautiful Bill. And, you know, we've got a lot of champions on Capitol Hill that certainly understand agriculture and, you know a lot about the programs and places where a little bit of a change could really make a difference in some of these programs. And so, you know, a lot of that was done. I think that's partially why, you know, we've been a little delayed in getting an actual farm bill, like we historically or typically would think of as the farm bill, because a lot of those provisions were taken care of in the One Big Beautiful Bill.
But some of these changes affect business operations, farming operations, just a little differently.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got farming businesses that are structured in all different kinds of ways. You know, you've got sole proprietorship, so that's, a sole proprietorship actually could be, you know, a husband and wife farming operation. Partnerships, S corporations, LLCs, joint ventures, general partnerships, and they're all a little different legally. And I am not an attorney, you know, to really dig into what the differences are in those business, how those businesses are structured, what, you know, which pathway, you know, the owner wants to go. You know, I'm not the guy to talk about that, but in the past, partnerships, joint ventures, general partnerships were treated differently, when it came to the opportunity, to pass through, and what they call a pass-through entity is to pass through to other members' benefits. And so LLCs and S corporations were left out of that. And so I think the idea was from Congress, I think they'd heard this, that there were, you know, and I'm sure these businesses are structured this way for, you know, certain maybe liability protections and other things, you know, that were structured as LLCs or S corps that were not treated equally, if they had multiple members, as some of these other business entities. So, the phrase pass-through entity, allows for that benefit to pass through the entity structure to touch other members, than just the single entity. It allows it to touch the members, with that benefit.
But says, hang on, good things are coming.
And I know farmers and ranchers and our employees all are going to like, the new tools and the new things that we're working on. So really excited about it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.